Welcome to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Join Jaguars General Manager Gene Smith and your host Cole Pepper as they break down the last Jaguars game and look at the next time the Jaguars take the field. We'll also take a dip inside the gene pool to see what makes a player stand out at his position. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith is brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Barbecue, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith begins right now.
And we welcome you in here on a Monday night following the Jaguars' frustrating 16-10 loss in Carolina to the Carolina Panthers. Cole Pepper here at Jaguars Central along with the general manager, Gene Smith. Had to be a tough flight back and a tough morning after a game where there were so many opportunities yesterday in Charlotte.
Well, there were plenty of opportunities, and we didn't take advantage of them. And as with life, you saw the result. It was a long flight. It felt like we came from the West Coast, really. The weather wasn't good, so the plane ride was bumpy, but it wasn't a short ride from Charlotte at all.
We will try to give as much balance to this as we possibly can. I do have some positive things I want to touch on, and then we'll certainly touch on some of the things that did not go well. And you've been very willing so far on this show always to address both sides of it, and we appreciate that. I think the fans do, too. You can, of course, contribute to the conversation via Facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars or on Twitter. You can just tweet to me at Cole Pepper, C-O-L-E-P-E-P-P-E-R, and with the best to comments we'll get on the air. All right, let's start with the positives. The running game. Maurice Jones-Drew, 24 carries, 122 yards. It's the best start of his career. He's averaging over 100 yards a game through the first three. Despite some of the issues that we saw, people say, well, boy, the preseason, you look at it, running game didn't do much in the preseason. Offensive line wasn't opening up big holes in the preseason. But Mojo's got it going here in the first 3 weeks of the regular season.
He's got it going. And, you know, the one thing about our run game, it does start up front with our offensive line and then certainly with our tight end and our fullback. So, you know, he's putting up good numbers because he's running extremely hard. There's a couple other opportunities where he could have really broke loose for some long runs, you know, through the first three games. And I think those will come as the season goes on because he's been a tackle away, like I said, a number of times from some explosive plays.
All right. The another positive from yesterday's ball game, the end of the first half touchdown, set up by a long kind of spurt through their run by Mojo. And then the play that was run was the same one, was the same one that resulted in the touchdown against Houston, but run differently because the defense was set up differently. It almost looked like a down, like a 30-yard screen pass. It's not exactly what it was, but kind of the way it worked out.
Yeah, Mike Thomas is the trailer there, and he made a great play. Got a good block by Zach Miller. It was a great way to end the half and get some momentum going in.
You know, it's interesting, too, because the that play in particular, when you think about Mike Thomas as a trailer, if you're within a position where you have a strong-arm quarterback who can make that throw without having to put a lot of air under it, which Blaine did yesterday, I mean, he put that one pretty much on a rope. That's a tough play to defend because you're going to have all your D-backs back there along the goal line of that area, and now all of a sudden you've seen two options over the last couple of years on how to do that. You either throw it to the short guy and get a block and he goes in, or all you have to do is the easy way to throw it up there and let the other team bat it to you for a touchdown, which was what happened against the Texans last year. That's a pretty neat little play, though.
It's a neat play. Now, the thing is, on a muddy field, advantage goes to the offense.
Sure.
Because, you know, the skill guys with the ball in their hands, they know where they're going. And it's no different if they don't have the ball in their hands. Like as a receiver, the defensive back doesn't know what type of route, how they're going to cut off the route on a muddy field. So it was a great opportunity to catch the ball and then to be able to do something with it to where the defenders really couldn't react as quick or as effectively.
And even on a day like that, when from about midway through the second quarter to early to mid-third quarter with all the rain, the field was a real issue, and maybe the field could have been a factor a little bit later on, where the offense would have that advantage. The Jaguars' defense only gave up 265 yards. Third straight game allowing fewer than 300 yards. The only team in the NFL so far this year that has not allowed a 300-yard offensive game by the opposition.
Yeah, it was a very good performance. I think if you ask Mel Tucker, tackling in the second half in particular, was suspect at times, and I think that had somewhat to do with the field conditions. Again, the advantages to the offense in those situations. And then we had six opportunities where defenders had two hands on the ball, and we came away with none. That was a tough one there, because if we can just come up with one big play on defense, it could have been a momentum changer. A
couple of chances at sacks, too, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say that this won't be the only show the Monday after a game against Cam Newton this is going to be said, but, boy, you were so close at a couple of opportunities to get sacks and or a strip or whatever else, and Cam was able to shrug off a defender or just move the pull the ball away at the last second, what have you. Roethlisberger-esque in terms of trying to bring him down when he's running around back there.
Yeah, I think that's a good comparison. He's tough to bring down, but the one thing he did is, even in the opportunities where we had him in grasp, he threw the ball away, and he was not going to take sacks. And he's a tough guy to defend because he can make plays with his feet. And anytime you have a quarterback like that, they bring a different element to the game, the arm and the feet.
And part of the Jaguars' defensive stats is something to point out. Jaguars only allowed one drive over 50 yards yesterday, and that was the one touchdown drive. And then the final positive in particular that I wanted to highlight here early on, Josh Scobie kicking a 53-yard field goal. Last week he kicked from 55. A great start to the year for the field goal kicker.
Yeah, like he started a year ago. We hope he can sustain it, but under those weather conditions, you know, the extra point was a difficult one. I mean, that rain was coming down hard, but the long field goal was an outstanding play in the game.
All right, so let's move on to some other topics, starting with the quarterback, Gabbert's first start. Was all the talk leading up to the ball game? How'd Blaine do?
I thought he did okay. He had a very good week of practice. There were some things that he did in practice probably that really had you wanting to see the game, and sometimes it doesn't always transfer to the game for whatever reason. But I feel like a good foundation's been laid, and he's going to end up, I think, here being a great player for us in the future.
The numbers are, by the way, remarkably similar to the – first start, and again, first start is it's anecdotal and doesn't really add a lot. You can't necessarily project it out, but I just looked back at some of the numbers that Ryan Robinson put together for the first starts for first-round pick quarterbacks over the last 20 years or so. His numbers and Ben Roethlisberger's numbers are almost identical from their opening start, just as a side note. A lot of folks are going to focus on the punter. Matt Turk had a couple of issues, you know, long punch to the short field, dropping the ball, that sort of thing. And you continue to talk about special teams and how important that is. You can't have those kind of mistakes and do what you want to be and have the top special teams in the league.
You can't. You know, he dropped the one ball. We had a lot of drops with the football. I know it was slick, but both teams are playing with the same ball. But, you know, when you look at the game, the inclement weather, both punters struggled. They both were 31 net, but we do have to be better in that particular area. There's no way that we can be giving up as much field position. We have to be stronger in that area for sure.
All right, we'll have more to talk about, including the last 16 seconds of the game. Certainly a big conversation point today. Play calling we'll touch on as well, although also want to remind everybody that despite the fact we're on to the day after the game, the general manager is not in charge of play calling and game planning. That's the coach's decision. You can always give a call to the Jack Del Rio show tomorrow if you'd like to discuss some of that as well, but we'll touch on it a bit. Also coming up, we'll have the Scout's Eye, the unsung player for the week, the guy who didn't necessarily make the game-changing play or have all the highlights, but who might have caught your eye if you were keeping a close eye on things. And if you tweet in or put on Facebook your guess and get it right, you will win a football autographed by the GM and by the unsung player this week, and we'll announce that at the end of the next segment. So get your tweets going at Cole Pepper, C-O-L-E-P-E-P-P-E-R, or on Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. We'll also, coming up, talk about a couple players who got into the starting lineup at different positions, Evan Britton and Dwight Lowry, and also talk about, the again, that last-second situation that the Jaguars dealt with in Carolina. More Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith coming up. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more stop by Gate today. Also, an injury update straight ahead right here on Jaguars Radio.
So here's a 53-yarder a week after he connected from 55 to make it 5-3. There's the snap, the placement by Turk, the kick up on the way. It's end over end, and it looks like it's got the distance. And he got it from 53 yards.
55 last week, and now 53.
There's that long field goal from Josh Scobie in yesterday's ball game. Scobie getting it from long range for the second straight week. This is Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith, and it's time now for an injury update brought to you by Baptist Health, Jacksonville's Circle of Care. Some good news on the injury front. Montel Owens knee, not an ACL as was feared at one point. MCL should be out maybe a week or two. We'll see. You never know for sure how those things are going to go, but much better to have an MCL than an ACL. You can return as far as that's concerned. We'll be keeping a close eye this week on whether the Jaguars can get Aaron Kampman and Matt Roth back in the lineup. Certainly will be key to get a good pass rush against Drew Brees and company on Sunday as the Saints come to town, and those will be a couple of the guys we'll be keeping a close eye on. Okay, a couple of other players I want to ask you about, Gene. And by the way, we'll continue to take your guesses here via Facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars on the Scout's Eye unsung player, as well as the on Twitter, at Cole Pepper. And we've got some good guesses coming in here already. Eben Britton moved to left guard. He had sort of played a partial role last week as an extra tight end. And then this week moved in at left guard. And you had talked about how well Guy Wimper had played the first couple of weeks. So, well, you don't want to – if you have a tackle playing well, you don't want to mess with that too much. So you put Britton in at left guard. A couple of different fans tweeting in wanting to know, you know, how did he play and what's his status going forward? Is he a left guard now, or do you just – you know, how do you use that?
Well, I think we're trying to play our best five. We feel like we got six guys who can start. And Eben certainly had his moments. Guard is a totally different position to play than tackle, believe it or not. You got a guy aligned right on your nose, a guy that is typically a leverage player, and a guy that's a powerful player, which is a little bit different than what you face at tackle. At right tackle, you'll sometimes get a guy with some strength, and not as much speed as you would have if you were the left tackle. Left tackle, you're getting a speed, an athletic guy that is really more of a pass rusher than a run defender. But on the right tackle spot, you still have more space, and you got a guy that typically isn't the leverage or the power player of the inside guy. So, you know, he had some trying times, but he competed the entire game. So we'll just have to see what Andy Heck declares this week going into the game.
And I do remember, I can remember a couple of times where tackles have been moved to guard, and one I can think of going back to 96 was utilizing Brian DeMarco, who had been a tackle, as a guard. You also sometimes see centers move to guard. It seems like rarely do you see a guard moved somewhere else, unless it's a situation like it was with Brad Meester going, you know, cutting his teeth basically in the league and moving over. Most of the time it's somebody gets moved to guard, and I think that may drive people to think, well, guard's an easier position to play. It's a different kind of position to play, and you're talking about for a guy like Eben who's used to dealing with some open area and a guy coming around the edge, you're not going to get that when you're playing guard. It's much more of a confined space, isn't it?
That is correct. And, you know, he can play every position on the offensive line. Actually, a year ago, he was our emergency center. So you'd like to have at least three guys that can play center. I believe we have six that can play center. So we have some versatility within that group. And, again, we're trying to get the five best guys on a given week out there. And, you know, I feel like coming off an injury and moving inside like that, it was a great challenge. And he played hard, you know, for the time that he was out there. It just wasn't all good. You know, the temperament that he brings to that offensive line group, it's nice to see him out in the field.
Dwight Lowry got the start of free safety, played quite a bit back there. He's got a nose for the ball. He had his hands on one, almost had what would have been a big interception. How'd he do in his first start back there?
He actually did a good job because he's got outstanding anticipation. he gets a jump on the quarterback. The one play was unfortunate where he had the face mask because he came up through trying to undercut the route and strip the ball out, and somehow he got part of the face mask, which isn't that visual on film when you're studying it. But it did happen, and I think probably the more he plays, I'd like to think the better he'll get within the scheme.
All right, let's talk about the last 16 seconds and clock management as a general rule. For starters, was it handled correctly by the officials? Did that go as the rules would dictate that would go down in terms of how the clock would start and so forth?
My understanding, yes.
Yeah, I thought so too. So, well, it's maddening. I know it's for fans, coaches, everybody going. Probably there were more people in Jacksonville screaming at the TV saying, snap the ball at that point. What happened at the end?
Well, really the last drive, you got, 62 seconds, and we get off four plays. When you don't have any timeouts like that, certainly when a play like that is reviewed, you got to be over the ball and ready to go. When they spot it and they start the clock, you got to be ready to run a play.
With a rookie quarterback in there, those are some of the things that you might say, boy, all right, let's keep an eye on this. You don't want to have a chaperone for the rookie quarterback, but you would like to have somebody kind of keeping an eye on those kind of situations. Are those the kind of conversations that a backup quarterback or quarterback's coach or veteran players, whatever else that happens as the week's going on, hey, you might see this come up?
Well, I think it's the whole offense. You got to be aware of the situation that you're in a particular game. It was 16 seconds, on that last play.
Usually you figure 7 seconds per play, don't you? 7 or 8 seconds, something like that. So
that's
two
correct.
Or three plays you could have gotten off at that point. And you go back, I think you said 62 seconds and three plays running 62
four
seconds?
Plays.
Four plays. So, you'd like to get a lot more opportunities than that at that point for sure.
Well, no question. Like I said, we have no timeouts, and we basically work the middle of the field. It's a learning lesson for everyone involved. I mean, something like that can happen. That's not how you're trying to close a game out that you're trying to win.
And just as a note, Blaine Gabbert said that he, after the game, when he got home, first thing he did was go and he one of his teammates watched the game on the TV rebroadcast or T-voted or whatnot to watch and see some of those things. Then he came in, watched film in the morning. So, you're talking about a young player who's diving right into it and trying to improve as things go on. So, all right, some of the issues there, and we'll talk some a little bit. Again, remember, it's not the play calling and the game plan didn't come out of the GM's office. It comes out from the coaches to handle. But we'll touch on that here in just a bit. But it is time now to name the Scout's Eye unsung player, the guy who played very well without necessarily getting all the accolades on game day, and he gets them here on a Monday. Who's the Scout's Eye unsung player this week?
Greg Jones.
Greg Jones, okay.
Yeah, Maurice had 122 yards, 5.1 average, and I can tell you he has high levels of respect for Greg Jones and what he does. He's got quiet toughness. He's a quiet leader. He just leads by example, sets the example for others to follow, actually, as a run blocker in particular, but he can pass block well. And you don't always get an opportunity to see what he's doing on each and every play like you may when someone's actually getting the ball, but he did an outstanding job yesterday.
Yeah, and when you see a back with 122 yards, usually somebody's doing a good job opening up holes, and that's exactly what Greg Jones did yesterday. So Greg Jones is the Scout's Eye unsung player. We do have at least one pick of Greg Jones I saw. We'll go back and review the tape here and see what we have. But our winner will get an autographed football, autographed by Greg Jones and by Gene Smith. All right, we'll take time out. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about, the play calling. It's been all the talk of things around town this week. Also, get into some of your questions and comments. You can join the conversation at Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars and Twitter. You can tweet to me at Culpepper. Fans, just text BBQ to 72239 and enter for a chance to win the Sunday's Game Ball Delivery Contest. You can hand the game ball to the ref at the start of the next Jaguars home game. We're back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout right here on Jaguars Radio.
There goes Morris to the outside. Morris is at the 45, the 50 makes a man miss. There he goes to the 45 to the 40 and pulled down at the 35-yard line. No flags on the play, and the Jaguars stop the clock with a timeout.
That's the type of play you want to run. But here's the thing. You got 6 seconds left is all.
Well, do you have enough time to maybe throw the ball down to about the 20-yard line and make it closer?
I mean, it'd be tough. You got one play.
And what would that one play be? Probably hear that coming back from the next break if I know Joe Fortunato, and I do. One of the big runs by Maurice Jones-Drew yesterday. Welcome back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith continues. Become part of the Jaguars Advantage, the new Jaguars fan loyalty program. With Jaguars Advantage, season ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of their favorite online retailers. For more information, go to jaguarsadvantage.com. All right, let's get some of these questions and comments from Facebook and Twitter. And you can tweet them to me at Cole Pepper. All right, let's get one that I'm sure is on the minds of many from Josh, who says, my question is, what are your thoughts on the conservative play calls?
Well, I think it was probably risk management with having a rookie quarterback starting his first game. Certainly as we got into the inclement weather situation, it made it more trying, but I think it was more risk management personally. It'd be a good question for Dirk. I'd like to think that that was part of it.
And I wonder what would have happened, and you can play what-ifs all day, but if the weather had not been what it was, and it was, again, I was here in beautiful, warm Jaguar Central watching on the array here, and but folks who were there at the stadium, Joe Fortunato took some pictures from the press box of just waterfalls coming out of the upper deck, and folks in the front rows in the stadium were bailing water out, and something like 4 or 5 inches over the course of an hour. I mean, it was a flat out downpour. It was a tropical storm type downpour. You have to kind of judge the field conditions as you go, as far as that's concerned. How much of a factor did you think the field was in how both teams handled the game?
Well, again, I think it's an advantage to the offense. I mean, they know where they're running their route, and when they have the ball in their hand, they know which way they're going to go with it. And on a muddy field like that, it is a competitive advantage. The only thing that I would say is, you know, going into the game, their best safety was out of the game, and then the second half, their best corner didn't play. He got hurt in the end of the first half, so we had a situation there with good weather, maybe to stress their secondary a little bit more. So if you're saying what would have been maybe different if we had anything to change, it might have been that area as the weather improved. Maybe take advantage of the delinquent secondary and the field conditions.
And they were already without a couple of linebackers.
Coming into the game, their best defensive player, really, Beeson was out, and then they lost Thomas Davis the week before, their willbacker. Their two best players were their two defensive ends, and I thought our tackles handled them for the most part throughout the day.
And we continue getting social, thanks to our friends at Copy Facts. Miko wants to know, Gene, do you think Maurice can handle more touches?
Well, I think he can. I just think we have to be smart about what we do because it is a long season, and we hope that it is an extended season. And so I feel like, you know, we got to leave that up to Dirk Cutter and the offensive staff in terms of how they're going to utilize him and get his touches.
All right. Tweet from Ryan, who asks about the center quarterback exchange. What happened with all the fumbles on the snaps?
Well, again, on film, and this is without talking to Blaine or Dirk, on one of them it looked like he just pulled out too soon. The other ones, it just looked like a slick ball. So I'm not certain. I mean, our defensive players had a difficult time catching it, and so did our offensive players. So it doesn't surprise me that on the exchange that would occur.
How you said earlier, the six opportunities at
six where we got two hands on the ball.
Yeah. Boy, just again, one of those games that just maddening with how close, how many opportunities, how many chances that folks had, and just couldn't quite couldn't quite pull it in. One of the things that I found interesting, too, Deji Kareem's getting a lot of touches, a lot of opportunities on third down especially. How's that balance? I mean, clearly he's got a lot of the makeup of what you would say would be a third down back. I can catch the ball out of the backfield quick, make a guy miss and in the flat and make a big play out of it. But Maurice has got some of those attributes. In fact, all of those attributes, just about the same kind of thing. They're very similar backs in terms of style. Obviously, Maurice is highly acclaimed and has a great pedigree as a running back. So what about the use of those guys on third down?
Well, I think it makes sense because they both can mismatch a linebacker for sure. And the other thing, they both have home run ability. And I think the one thing that people don't realize with Deji Kareem is the fact he can pass pro. That's the one area he improved from a year ago. Mm-hmm. And that is one thing that Maurice could do the day he walked in, because he'll stick his face in there regardless of who it is. And I think, both players are trying to be complete players at that position.
All right, another one from Jonathan, who says, what do you think of the wide receivers as a whole so far, and what do you expect from Chasten West, who was a recent signee? And got on the field a little bit on Sunday.
He did. I think he'll develop into someone who can help us. We certainly got to have more playmaking out of the wide receiver group for sure. We had a couple of drops that certainly could have helped us sustain drives. That's the one area in offense that we have to make strides for this team to improve offensively.
How much better can you get now in terms of whether it's changing personnel, whether it's improving guys as the season goes on? Is it just about getting comfortable with the new quarterback? How does that group get better?
Well, I think one of the things you hope week to week is you improve as a football team. An improving football team eventually will become a winning football team. And it's just getting better with your timing, with the quarterback, working with basically the same set of receivers. And that includes the tight end and the backs. The more you do it, the better you should get. A phrase I always like to use, you are what you emphasize. And that's one of the areas I know in practice. You got to take what you do there, which we did good last week in practice, and transfer it to the game.
All right. We mentioned earlier Evan Britton got the start at left guard, and that's where Will Rackley, the rookie, had been playing. Kevin and a couple of other tweeters in here saying, what does this mean for the future of Rackley?
Well, it means we're going to play our best players. So wherever he can line up and start and help us win, that's where he'll be put, and that's up to our coaching staff. I feel very confident he'll be an outstanding player for a long time for this organization. I have a lot of confidence in his ability.
William says he's tired of hearing that we don't have any weapons on the team. He thinks Mercedes is one. Do you agree?
I do agree. He had two catches in the game. Certainly, he's a guy who can be a playmaker in the passing game. Zach Miller's another guy. Zach had an outstanding week of practice last week. Just did not get opportunities in the game this week.
I just realized that I have made a terrible mistake. We went right by the start of the bottom of the hour without getting into the gene pool and doing this. I'm calling the audible here, and we'll do the gene pool right now at the end of the segment instead of the beginning, as we look at one key position. Got so excited to talk about some of these other things. Nose tackle, the position we're looking at today. Due to my deep and abiding research, it was all defensive tackle. And last week we talked about the average defensive tackle would be about 305. Nose tackle usually a little more stout and a little bigger. What are the numbers on the nose tackle position?
Well, really, a lot of the teams will, whether you're 3-4 or 4-3, the sizes are somewhat comparable, although the nose tackle or the one techniques tend to be a little heavier, a little bit more run stuffers. And a week ago I said 6.02, 4.306, running 5.1, and starters in the league, 6.030, 3.05, running 5 flat. So I would say for the most part, when you're talking about a nose tackle or one technique, like I said, they are bigger, they are space eaters, they do munch guards and centers. They're guys who take two for one to keep the linebackers free. And they're guys who have to be very stout against the run. And at times, they'll force a lot more plays than they'll actually get the opportunity to make because they're keeping the linebackers free.
One of the non-measurable things, the personality traits I think you might find with those guys is, would be stubborn, right? You want a guy who not only is tough to move, but doesn't like being moved when he's in there, anchor in the middle of that defensive line.
No question, and they have to be players, too, that if it is a passing situation, that they can press the pocket. So they may not get on the edge of the block as quick as maybe a three technique, but they're going to press or walk the guard or the center back into the quarterback so he can't step up into his throws.
And you talk about a one technique. That means either that he's between the center guard gap or straight on the nose sometimes if he's in a 3-4 potentially. And this would be more Terrence Knighton-esque than Tyson Alualu-esque would be, I guess, a Jaguars comparison for it. And all right, so who is best? Who's the best either going now that you've scouted, that you've seen? Who's your
pick? Casey Hampton is a true nose tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's been to 5 Pro Bowls, so he's probably as good as any in the NFL right now. You know, Terrence Knighton, for us, when he came out, he's 6'03", 321. He ran low 4.9s. And he's a guy with 34.5-inch arms, 10-inch hands. So he's a guy that can steer and control the center and the guard. A guy going back a few years would be Ted Washington that a lot of people may know. He was 6'5", 375.
At least.
Yes. And he was a Pro Bowl player. And he's probably the most reputable one. In recent years, that was the greatest example of just a space eater, like I said earlier, a guy that just is someone you just can't move off the spot, let's just put it that way. And he was a big force to throw the ball over to for a quarterback.
All right, so that is our gene pool. Next week, we'll get into the quarterbacks in the gene pool. That should be a fun one to get into. All right, we'll take time out here. When we come back, quick look at the AFC South. We'll look at the upcoming matchup against the Saints as the Jaguars welcome Drew Brees and company to town on Sunday. What are the key matchups to watch in that one? We'll hear it from the general manager when we come back. This is Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right here on Jaguars Radio.
4 defensive backs drop deep. 4 linebackers deep. They'll rush 3. Charles Johnson's coming. Gabbert steps, rolls to his right, plants, turns, and throws. And this one's going to be caught. And Mike Thomas has got it. He's headed for the end zone. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Oh, my. What a play.
There's the touchdown from yesterday's ball game with the Jaguars seeing the rookie, Blaine Gabbert, throwing his first touchdown. And, again, intriguing little play. Same one. Seen some variations of it in the past, and that's what got the Jaguars out in front at the end of the first half yesterday. We continue here, Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Quick look at the AFC South. Houston losing at New Orleans 40-33 yesterday to get their first loss of the season. So the Texans are 2-1 and tied with the Titans, who after losing to the Jaguars in the opener have reeled off a couple of wins back-to-back. Suddenly Matt Hasselbeck looks like a different quarterback. They beat Denver 17-14. Jaguars in at 1-2 after the loss in Carolina. And the Colts at 0-3, they led in the second half against Pittsburgh, were tied 20 apiece until the final 8 seconds, and then the Steelers get the field goal last night. And a couple of interesting bits of news as far as the Colts are concerned. Kerry Collins, a concussion in that game. We'll see about his availability. Peyton Manning, not expected to be back this year, according to what Bob Irsay said during a breakfast in Indianapolis today. So we'll see how this plays out. I think a lot of folks were expecting that Peyton probably would not have not come back this year, but suddenly the Colts are in a pickle as far as the quarterback position is concerned, and they're at 0-3. We'll see how it plays out from here. Undefeated teams remaining in the NFL. The Packers, if I would have said, name for me the teams that will be 3-0, Packers probably would have been on the list for most people, defending champs. But the Bills, Redskins, and Lions are all unbeaten at 3-0. The Lions look terrific in the preseason, have continued to look very good. The Bills, with a remarkable come-from-behind win over the Patriots yesterday, and the Redskins, who are getting some good pass rush so far, doing it as much with defense in the running game as anything, are unbeaten. Winless so far, we mentioned the Colts, also Kansas City, who's just looked awful, and have lost one of their best defensive players and one of their best offensive players already for the year. Minnesota, Miami, and St. Louis. Rams have to be one of the more surprising teams to be where they are. 0-3, you don't expect that, but that's where the winless teams are for the year. The Saints are not winless as they come in. Of course, they lost the opener in a tremendously entertaining game against the Packers. The Saints come in on Sunday here to Everbank Field to take on the Jaguars. It'll be a great test for the defense, no doubt.
It'll be a great test. Really, they'll be as talented of a team that we'll face this year on our schedule. And, it'll be a great matchup, like you said, Cole, for our defensive personnel in particular.
You'd love to get Roth and Campman back in there for the pass rush, as we mentioned earlier. But, boy, Breece is a tough guy to rush, kind of in the Peyton Manning sense. He gets rid of it in a hurry, doesn't wait too long back there, maybe doesn't have the quick release you sometimes see with Manning, but the decision-making is so quick. And, always one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the league.
He is. The only thing he really lacks is height. Mm-hmm. I mean, he does have a quick mind. I think he's got a quick release. He's got quick feet. And he's got probably the two best guards on one team up in front of him to anchor the pocket. So it'll be a real test.
So is that the key matchup? Every week you have a key matchup. The guards, is that against Tyson and Knighton?
I would say so. Jari Evans and Carl Nix matched up against, Terrence and Titan, Tyson. I think it'll be a real battle inside. It's probably not as fun to watch those matchups inside as it is just to follow the ball, but this would be 1 week to do that.
And we'll keep a close eye on that. And, of course, this is not a pleasant thing if you're a Jaguars fan, but the Saints have averaged more points per game than the Jaguars have scored all year, so certainly two different types of teams. Saints are trying to outscore teams. So far, Jaguars have been a defense and running game-oriented kind of team. I will also mention that today in his press conference, Jack Del Rio talked about wanting to see the offense opened up a little bit more. The fans have been clamoring for it, so who knows? Maybe we'll see even more of the offense opened up this week, provided there's no monsoon coming in. We haven't checked the weather yet. Joe, do you have a weather report? No monsoon for this week? Okay, that's good. So we'll see how it all plays out. This is a big week, though. And I will point out that last year, after three games, the Jaguars were 1-2. And there were people who were saying that the season is over. They're not going anywhere. Let's look. We'll try to work for the first pick and try to get Andrew Luck, who everybody thought was coming out at this point. At 1-2, you're not out of it by a long shot. You'd rather be 2-1 for sure. But the Jaguars went from 1-2 to 8-5 and playing for the division championship last year. So just one of my final thoughts, just thought your reflection on that bit of history.
Well, as we sit here today, the Eagles, the Bears, and the Falcons are all 1-2 as well. So there's a lot of season left. And we try to take the season by each quarter. And hopefully we end up 2-2 in the first quarter and see where we can go from there.
And you probably take 500 or better in every quarter. If they gave you that, you'd have a winning record and be in good shape to be a playoff contender as things roll out. All right, coming up this week, want to remind you, tomorrow night, the Jack Del Rio Show, 6 o'clock, Brian Sexton will have the head coach. And then on Wednesday, it's Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Brian will be in along with Jeff Loggeman and John Osher to look back a bit and look forward to the Jaguars and the Saints. And then game day, Jaguars are back home on Sunday. Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show gets things started at 10 o'clock, followed by the set of the pregame show, and then kickoff at 1 o'clock. And some sources close to the situation tell me that ticket sales actually been pretty good for this game, and we'll see if we can get close to avoiding the blackout. That'll be a big one. Also want to invite folks to listen in this weekend. We'll have, I think, some intriguing interviews you'll want to hear as part of our coverage as we get you ready for the Jaguars and the Saints. All right, Jaguars at 1-2, get ready for New Orleans to come to town. Trying to get to the even 500 record after the first quarter of the season. Gene, thanks for stopping in, and we look forward to a better performance on Sunday.
Thank you, Cole, and thank you, Joe.
For Joe Fortunato and the general manager, Gene Smith, Cole Pepper saying thanks for listening, and good night from Jaguar Central.